caller says, would you ask Irish Water why they emptied 1.5 metres of water from a reservoir supply in Buncrana in the midst of a water shortage? They said it was to prevent the banks bursting. There are no banks, as it's a natural lake, all below ground level. They're now using a diesel-powered pump to extract the remaining water, which is below the level of the outlet pipe. I'd be interested in more information in relation to that. And although the water main was replaced in Navaney Street, Ballybuffet, but they only went as far as the Centra shop. And according to the workers, there's still about 100 metres of old iron pipe left on that water main. They couldn't replace the old pipe because the council retarred that bit of road a few weeks before the replacement work started. And that new tar can't be dug up for 5 years. The old pipe is around 75% blocked with iron deposits. Again, according to these workers. So instead of doing it all in one, and not have to look at them new pipes for years, they leave it no sense. Now, that's one person's version of that. Interesting to see if that can be backed up. 4,500 to name the most expensive rip-off in the history of the state is an insult. How about the bottomless pit, the black hole? That's 3 million they owe me. Well, put in an invoice. They'll probably pay you. Greg, what's the current situation with the rebuilding of your defective block home? If you're building on the current foundations, will you still be able to get house insurance? That's where we're at. I don't know. And I'm not sure if there's a one-size-all-fits answer to that. If you did happen to rebuild on the old fans, now I know a lot of people are digging into their own pockets and taking the fans out because they are of the view that it's only a matter of time before they begin to disintegrate. I don't know. And I don't want to give sort of off-the-cuff advice. So if there's anyone out there, did you rebuild on your old foundations? What was the story with house insurance? Effectively, potentially, your building still contains deleterious materials, albeit maybe interacting with the atmosphere and what's around them in a different way. But is an insurance company going to think that nuanced? I'm not really quite so sure. 086 60 25,000, by the way, that is the contact for us. Right now, Minister for Social Education Michael Moynihan has confirmed to Pat the Cope Gallagher that Little Angels School Letterkenny is to have 2 additional teaching posts on foot of notification of enrolments received by school management. Now, I've been long enough in this game to not know if this is properly good news or not until such time as I speak to people directly affected by that. And one of those is Leonard Watson, a parent of a child in Little Angels School and also on the parents' representation, or a parent's representative, should I say, on CDNT. So, Leonard, as I say, black and white, looks like good news. Is it so?
Oh, Greg, listen, at the end of the day, when there's ever extra staff being brought into your school, it is good news. We have to be grateful, but I still think the big story is the school's still not open yet. You know, I met with Minister McConnell Ogle last week, and he is guarantees the school will be open in September, but this school should have been open a couple of months ago too. Like, so it's frustrating that way on for parents, and that, you know, we were told maybe in February our children would be going up, and it's now June and no child has been in the school. So I say it is good news, but still there's still a lot of work to do. Even around, There's 3 or 4 therapist posts that haven't been filled yet, you know. So it's things like this here, like even actually a functioning board in the school. We haven't had a functioning board in 2 years. Things this, I think a functioning board would actually maybe move these things on quicker too. You know, in fairness to the principal, she can't really say too much out loud, but a board can say the things that maybe should be said. Like,
yeah, are the 4 modular classrooms on site yet? Do we know?
Well, they're always there, Greg. Yes, but that's part of the old. It's going to be the old Little Angels premises that will be used. That's the 4 modular buildings. I'm taking it like.
Yes, okay, because it doesn't jump out at you necessarily in the statement. It reads as follows. Pat the Cope Gallagher has thanked the parents for their continuous pressure, culminating in an agreement with the HSE that 4 modular classrooms in addition to the new school are to be used, thus ensuring all pupils are accommodated. Yeah. So those 4 modulars then are on the old site, and that is complementing the new school. Are you? Is there anything to suggest to you that maybe the school might not open in time? And if that's the case, is there access to the old Little Angels building? If that were to be the case, because it's July now, effectively, so that's July and August.
Well, I'd like to say me and a couple of the refs met with Munch McConnell on Monday, actually, and we put that question to him, and he's very confident that we'll be open for September. It has to be open, Greg, because the old school can only facilitate the children's there at the moment. So we need the new school and the old school. But again, this is only a temporary fix. You know, are we going to look at this time next year? The numbers, we can't facilitate them. So we have to get the permanent solution, which maybe is a school, maybe the far side of the gap in Donegal Town, an extra school. But something needs to happen because we can't be sitting every year with parents frustrated that they have nowhere for their child to go. Like.
Do you think part of the government solution, does this tie into our coverage? I'm not sure if you heard it a little earlier in the week about, you know, children with, you know, mild needs moving into mainstream classes and the likes of then maybe St. Bernadette's Special School becoming available and operating similar to that of Little Angels. Is that what's happening here?
Great, you know what? Funny, I was just chatting to Karen earlier. Like, I have two children with autism, our oldest boy and the youngest boy. The oldest boy went to an autism unit off a school in Woodlands and it worked perfectly. Mm. There is children that just does not work for. Like, it just, they just can't cope. It's sensory. There's so much things going on. Like, and just to, again, we're trying to pigeonhole children into boxes that does, it just doesn't fit. Like,
no, none of us can be put in a box. Yeah,
you know, at the end of the day, the children of St. Bernadette's are there for a reason because they can't cope, or maybe the school.
But
can't
I just
cope
wonder. I just wonder. Is the plan to displace the likes of the students in St. Bernadette's into mainstream schools with a view to accommodating more children with more complex needs in such schools? I don't know. Is that, do you think that's possibly what could be going on?
Do you know what, Greg? I haven't heard too much about this. Now, we haven't heard, again, there's that much stuff going on too, but I would find that very disappointing because we have all different levels of autism or special needs. Like, you know, and at the end of the day, Little Angels, it is probably for the more severe cases, where St. Bernadette's is for the children that, you know, are probably milder, but still can't maybe cope with a mainstream setting.
Like, yeah.
You
know, that's it for sure.
We have all the settings. We have the units of the mainstream schools. We have St. Bernadette's and we have Little Angels. So we have all the different levels. And to start messing about with that now, you know, it's children. You know, it says children. We're chatting about here, you know, we shouldn't just be starting messing about with systems. If the system's working, don't mess with it. Like.
Nothing more important than children, and that's why we spend so much time talking about it, trying to make any little difference that we can on this show. So the bottom line is then good news for Little Angel schools on the face of it, but these positions need to be filled. There are other positions that need to be filled, and the actual new school itself needs to be not just open, but it has to be presumably properly equipped and prepared for you know, any specific needs that might be there. Whatever work needs to be done on the four modular classrooms to make sure they're up to scratch. There's a lot to do in the next couple of months, Leonard.
Well, Joe, not even the next couple of months, the next couple of years. We have to start future-proofing these schools. Like, you know, at the end of the day, they're not like mainstream schools where you can have builders in every couple of years. Even the fact that you could have builders on site can be a tough time for children maybe who have sensory with noise and dust and all. So we have to start future-proofing schools that they're big enough for a 4 or 5 year period or 6 year period ever. Mm-hmm. Instead of this kind of stick and plaster, which it is at the moment, the modular buildings is a stick and plaster. It's not perfect, but we have to get these children into the school.
Yeah, okay. Leonard, listen, thanks so much for your time as always. Have a great day.
Yep. Hey, thanks. Take care.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Right, I got this email in a short while ago, but I just didn't get around to reading it now. And it's about people's experience or a person's experience with the Garda recruitment process. And it reads as follows. I wanted to share my recent experience with the Garda recruitment process in case others have gone through something similar. I applied to the February 2025 recruitment campaign knowing I didn't fully meet the educational requirements. I don't have a strong leaving cert, and while I've completed various courses over the years, they don't total the required 120 credits for level 5. Still, with over 25 years of experience in the public service and as a mature woman of 46 with 4 grown children, I thought I might have something valuable to offer. I applied with realistic expectations. To my surprise, I was invited to complete stage 1, the aptitude test. I assumed this was standard for all applicants, so I went ahead. Weeks later, I received word that I had passed and was invited for interview. I was over the moon to hear I had passed the interview stage 2. Throughout the process, I was completely honest about not having the required qualifications, but then, after a month of silence, I rang public jobs, only to be told I wasn't eligible to proceed further due to the educational criteria. No one had flagged this earlier, and I felt completely strung along for months, led to believe I had a real shot, only to be told I shouldn't have been progressing at all. In all my years, I've never experienced such a disorganized system. I've emailed senior figures and only ever received the same dismissive responses. It's disheartening. The Gardaí say they're crying out for new recruits, yet they're overlooking people who bring decades of life and work experience that no piece of paper can replace. I just wanted to share my story in case others have gone through something similar. I doubt I'll apply again. The entire process has left me feeling extremely disappointed and disillusioned. It really knocked the wind out of me. Thanks for taking the time to read this. And again, I'd be grateful if you just withhold my name. Signed, a very disappointed and disheartened woman. Yeah, it's a toughie, isn't it? If your educational criteria, or if the educational criteria wasn't met, why do the aptitude test? Why bring you in for an interview? You know, you're two steps down the line there, and then to hear nothing. Very, very disheartening. I'm not sure if anyone else can relate to that, because, you know, fair play to you at your stage of life, still a very young person, but having raised your children, to think, right, I can do something here, I can make a difference. And also to sort of say, right, I don't necessarily have the exact educational requirements, but let's see how we go. I'm just not sure that's going to be incredibly relatable to the masses. And what I mean by that is how many other people had the drive and push that you had. But we'll put it out there and we'll see. 086 60 25,000. I must take a very short break. Back in a moment. The EU Commission is said to be under pressure to ban the use of dairy or meat terminology to promote or advertise vegetarian or synthetic foods. The employment of terms like sausage, burger and schnitzel in vegetarian or vegan foods was deliberate and cynical and must constitute a breach of any Trade Descriptions Act as commonly understood. Well, Dennis Drennan is president of the ICMSA, that's the Irish Creamery and Milk Suppliers Association. Are you upset at, I suppose, people using phrases like veggie burgers or, you know, veggie sausages, Dennis?
Well, good morning, first of all, and good morning to all your listeners. Look, this is something that has developed European-wide, excuse me, and there's a regulation being pushed at the moment by a French MEP called Céline Imart, and she's a member of the European People's Party, and this is something that's coming up all over Europe. So it's not just about burgers and sausages that we would associate here in Ireland, but it could be like the likes of schnitzel, frankfurters in Germany, or goulash in Hungary, or whatever. It's just developing a problem that you know, people have an expectation if they go by what is always termed and dear to them as being a meat-containing product. And now we have these multi-billion euro corporations, you know, trying to really piggyback on the names and reputations and, we'll say, the taste, the texture and the experience that people have in eating meat-based products. And, you know, we feel it's unfair, as do most of Europe at this point in time.
What could the problem be? Because the consumer is not thick, right? So they know the difference between a vegetable sausage and a pork sausage. Just using that as one example, though, I know it's not specific to sausages. Yeah, so what's the harm in that?
But I suppose if you have a new product coming to the market and you have faith in that product and you deem that there's going to be a demand for that product and people are going to enjoy eating that product, and we have no problem with anybody being vegan, vegetarian, whatever lifestyle choices people make, whatever taste, experience, texture they want from their food or from their lifestyle, that's absolutely fine with us. But we don't feel it should be piggybacked on the basis of something that's been established for decades and centuries as regards what it should be like. If you look up the Oxford Dictionary, the definition of a sausage is minced pork mixed with herbs and spices and, you know, transferred into a sausage, like a sausage shape. We even have this shape of sausage. And it's even more important in other European countries where, you know, certain local products are deemed to be made from local meats and local traditions. So, I mean, I piggyback, if somebody wants to bring out a vegan product and there's a place in the marketplace for that and people deem it to be, you know, something that they enjoy eating, that's absolutely fine. But why piggyback on names that are established for centuries based on the experience that the consumer has?
I think what's going to be more problematic, not diminishing that problem, is synthetic meat that's created in a lab, effectively chicken breasts that never were attached to an actual chicken. If they were marketed as chicken breasts. I think, you know, even the consumer might have a big issue with that.
Yeah, well, like you see, this is where, like, this market creep. I mean, if you look at where most of it started was with milk drinks, dairy drinks. And, you know, European Union has outlawed that you cannot call oat drink oat milk, because obviously a field of oats that you look out at doesn't have any mammary glands and can't produce milk. So that's already been banned at European level. So we're delighted to see that the European are looking at this and protecting the long-established reputation of the products that are being covered by this bill, and that people, you know, young children especially at an impressionable age, won't eat a sausage or what's called to be a sausage that is not actually a sausage, and you know, have a bad experience possibly and put them off eating sausages or burgers or schnitzels for the rest of their life.
Jerry Boland's founder and spokesperson of Animals Behind Closed Doors. What's your view on this story, Jerry?
I think it's a non-story, except, you know, Dennis and all the people who are in the industry are making it a story. Personally, I think it's ill-advised. I think it's kind of a nonsense story, to be honest with you. As you say yourself, people know what a veggie sausage is, and they know whether it's got meat in it or not. But to me, to be quite honest with you, the only really cynical thing in this odd debate is how the farming industry itself attempts to sell the industry as welfare friendly, when the exact opposite is the case. Like, you know, the fact is that over 98% of all the pig meat raised and produced in this country and eaten by people and sold abroad is raised in intensive conditions. That means factory farmed. So why, for instance, isn't that labelled in the supermarkets? Why isn't there a label saying this product, and on the 8 sausages you buy, this product comes from an intensive industry where the pigs never see the light of day and are slaughtered at 6 months of age, and all the other things that happen to them.
I think, Jerry, obviously the argument could be made that it's not all like that, but that's not the point I'm going to make. But, you know, like, we talk about consumers not being stupid. Like, someone eating a sausage, it's not like they don't even perhaps want to think that it's a happy, friendly animal jogging around the field. We kind of know that, and we kind of accept it, and that's part of meat eating, isn't it? Whether you agree with it or not, the consumer, again, is not silly.
The meat industry has adopted the name sausage. You know, the sausage comes from the Latin salsus, to mean salted. Mm-hmm. There's no dog in hot dog, for instance. So these are just semantics that we're dealing
with. Can I just finish the point? Yes, of course, go ahead.
Yeah, like the meat industry, you know, is taking ownership of sausage. But, like, I became vegetarian 40 years ago. And for the first 10 years, I don't eat vegan sausages. I don't, you know, I think it's rubbish food, just like I think ordinary meat sausages is rubbish food. I don't eat it. But for the first 10 years of my vegetarian life, I made vegetarian sausages. And it just was the obvious thing just to use that name. It's confusing enough for consumers as it is with all the labelling and the confusing.
But
labeling.
Jerry, let me introduce the term. Yeah, but let me just suggest we're kind of disadvantaged that you don't eat these products, okay? But if the meat industry started sort of making their labelling on sausages a little bit ambiguous, whereby they said, you know, pork veggie sausages because there was a bit of vegetable through the sausage, you know, vegetarians would start kicking up a stink here because it would be encroaching on their IP, wouldn't they? And maybe someone might accidentally eat a pork sausage that is not vegetarian. So we do need clear marketing boundaries for reasons like that, surely, at least.
Yeah, but, like, an overall point is that the meat industry is hugely powerful. Like, it's valued at the moment at over $1 trillion. The vegan industry is valued at the moment at about $45 billion. Mm. So, like, it's tiny compared. So what's happening here is that the meat industry is using its muscle to try and restrict competition and to try and hinder competition. That's what this is about. They see the vegan movement encroaching on their territory, and they don't like it, and they're very powerful. And I just think it's that they're shooting themselves in the foot with this. I don't think these terms are going to be changed. And I think I think consumers will see it for what it is, as a cynical exercise just to try and, restrict further the vegan industry, which is on the growth, and it's on the, everyone knows it's growing very fast. And that's for a whole pile of reasons, not just animal rights reasons, environmental reasons, climate change reasons, human health reasons. The arguments are very, very powerful now for a plant-based diet.
All right.
And that's what the meat industry is afraid of.
But Dennis, I mean, you're not hiding that fact, are you? You want to protect the industry and you don't want any further encroachment by the veggie industry off the back of, you know, names that are so strongly associated with meat.
But just, you've answered a question yourself. I mean, the names that are so associated with meat, or if you go to Germany and order schnitzel, you presume you're going to get veal. And if you go to Hungary and order goulash, you presume you're going to get, you know, minced beef in it. Like, and I mean, it doesn't, as I said, there's no threat here. There's not a threat from the vegan movement, because the vegan movement is expanding at a much slower pace than world population. Actually, if anything, meat is becoming a deficit in the world. That's where the market is. That's not created by me as a farmer. That's where the consumer is voting with their feet. So we have no issue with people becoming vegans, vegetarians, whatever their dietary choices are. That's absolutely no problem whatsoever. We welcome everybody. There should be a choice for everybody, and everybody is free to make the choices for what they want to eat. What we're saying is, if you want to bring a new product onto the market that's not a schnitzel, not a frankfurter, not goulash, you know, find your own name to it. Like, don't be just piggybacking on what's established as a pleasurable experience to eat a sausage or eat a schnitzel, and piggybacking on top of that. Bring out your own name. If the product is good enough and popular enough, it will become a recognised brand, the same as any other brand does out there. And, you know, just leave the meaning that people have understood for centuries as it is. Not confusing people, and not throwing a spanner in the works and piggybacking on what has been long established for centuries.
Oh, veggie backing for that matter. Jerry, last word to you.
Well, last word to me is, I think everyone knows what it means when they go in to buy a vegan burger. Nobody, and likewise meat eaters as well. I think this is absolutely unnecessary. I don't think it's a threat to the industry. I think it's further confusion if we start renaming vegan burgers and vegan sausages. But it doesn't really matter what they're called. And for me, the main thing is that it's the compassionate choice, it's the environmentally friendly choice. I know Dennis won't agree with that, but that's my view on it.
Thank you very much, Jerry Boland, Dennis Drennan, both of you. Have a lovely day. Okay, Paul McLaughlin, gardener at Ballagher Garden Centre. Welcome into studio. How are you keeping?
Not so bad, Greg.
Good stuff. And like your outfit, we're all set for the weekend.
Oh, yes, yes. New on the course of the mast and all.
Are you going to get down to the game?
No, don't
too busy
so.
Saturday, isn't it?
Just
too much moving around to be done. Mixed bag with the weather again. What's it mean for growth, for gardens, for hedges, for trees, for whatever?
Pretty much it's mild, so the growth's still fairly strong, if you know what I mean. But in terms of flowers, the sunshine's not there, just so it's... Maybe things aren't looking maybe as bright and vibrant as they should be. But I know the long-range forecast is a big heat wave on the way, so we're living in hope.
We see it?
We heard that one before.
Yeah, we're past the longest day. We're in midsummer really now, aren't we?
Yes, midsummer pretty much.
And interestingly, it's not for a few days yet that the evenings draw in. A lot of people are saying it's getting darker, but it's actually the day shortens from the morning, I think, until the 28th.
Yeah, pretty much. There's sort of like probably the longest day on average, if you know what I mean, maybe, but one side's still going more than the other.
Summer, traditionally midsummer, celebrating the fertility and abundance in the garden, and we're seeing a lot of that too.
Yes, absolutely. I know midsummer traditionally always, probably going back to pre-Christian times and all, that was a very important time. I suppose they always worked with the solstices and stuff, so it's a time where a lot of plants, like even your berries and stuff, are all in season, so it's a time of celebration for the growing stuff, you know.
And you can go and graze the hedges.
Yes, pretty much.
And your plants and what have you, all picked
them. I was just checking the blackcurrants this morning, they're looking well.
Yeah, but you can see why traditionally access an ample access to fresh fruit why traditionally, you know, there was celebrations in the summer. I wonder, is that where our festivals come from?
I think it's where a lot of them can trace their sort of roots back to that. Sort of they did celebrate times of abundance and that sort of stuff, you know.
And is this a traditional time of year for herbs to reach their full maturity?
Yes, funny. Now, a lot of time the herbs are in full flower, which is around now. I'm supposed to, the one associated with midsummer would be St. John's wort. Which is...
what is that? Because wort, instantly I'm just thinking of a wart.
Yes, no, it's W-O-R-T. Don't know what the significance of that is. If you don't know. St. John's wort is a hypericum. It's a type of hypericum you get sort of once for the garden now, but it's the native one. You would get it growing quite a lot around here, around Fannad and stuff. But St. John's Day is the 24th of June, which is sort of coming from pre-Christian midsummer. And that's whenever it's sort of deemed to be at its strongest. But,
and what would people use it for?
Pretty much, it's still used a lot for depression, but the main one seems to be used for.
And is it made into a tea, rubbed into the skin?
Made into a tea, okay. Pretty much. Probably there are probably sort of toxic elements to it too, so you need to know what you're doing, basically. But it's a long association with Donegal, in the sense that it was always known as St. Colm Kills plant. He was a big promoter of it. He always wore it in his clothes and stuff. Okay. As a symbol for protection and for depression. And that would be a thing. And there, another benefit of it as well, it's most powerful around the 24th. So around now, if you put it under your pillow, you can dream of your future wife or husband.
Okay. Oh, not. Yes, don't put it under your pillow. Yeah, indeed. I wonder, is that still a tradition? Perhaps it is. We mentioned, you know, tons of summer fruit and what have you. All very exciting times as well for, you know, private potato growers and people growing other stuff. Is it harvesting time yet?
It's pretty much getting to be harvesting time, all right. Probably early onions, scallions, that sort of stuff would be all looking pretty good at the minute. A wee bit early for tomatoes, although in our tunnel we got a few out there the last day. But potatoes that are sort of traditionally starting to come now at the start of July. Even you see the sort of trailers popping up along the road and stuff, you know. Mm. But it really is hard to beat your own homegrown stuff. So
when do you pick the tomatoes? What colour are they at, like?
Generally, we at this time you'd allow them to go red on the plant.
Yeah.
So they would just...
My mum used to pick them green. I don't know why
somewhere. Probably towards the end of the year, maybe.
Right, okay.
The wooden the
this
same
was indoor kind of stuff, and, I seem to recall.
Put them in the windowsill then.
Yeah.
Right, but now generally, if you're looking for sort of a succession of the crop, you would pick them a wee bit, just take them as they ripen.
And what would be the difference between sort of like a ripe tomato off the vine locally and maybe one you might pick up from a store?
Yes.
In terms of taste, texture.
Yeah. The big difference is, the taste is just 100% different.
Is it? So,
yeah.
Is it sweeter, bitterer?
Generally sweeter, I would have thought. So it is now. But the other thing is you can pick them at the appropriate time of ripeness. Like if you buy them in the supermarket, a lot of the time they're probably have been picked green and they still will be a long way from being ripe.
I know what you're saying.
If I have a few the next time round, I'll bring you up a bag.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, a lot of my eating was texture-based, not taste-based know, and things like mushrooms, tomatoes, and I would just, now it's not as much an issue for me with tomatoes. I can, you know, a bit of salt on them, ham sandwich, delicious, or whatever, in a salad, I would love them. And I don't mind them bitter or sweet either, for that matter. All right, so great stuff. If you are harvesting your spuds, your scallions, your onions, your fruit, send us pictures of what you've managed to bag so far. Is there a right or wrong time to pick? How do you know when potatoes are ready? I mean, obviously we're talking sort of like in calendar times here, but
yeah,
and obviously those in the know, right? But say, for instance, it's someone's first crop or something. Is there a right or wrong stage of their growth or development to pick them?
Pretty much. Suppose a lot of it comes with experience. Traditional way would be the potato plant grows and then it flowers and you let the flowers die back for 2 or 3 weeks. And then after that, they should be good to go. But most potato crops, you're chatting sort of a minimum of 100 days in the ground. So you would be. I suppose the traditional way was, they were associated with going into St. Patrick's Day, and then they should have been ready to come out around the 12th of July. So the saying was, in with Paddy and out with Billy.
So that's not the first time we've used that one. It still makes me laugh. Gardening jobs now, you know... We're seeing quite a bit of rain, but then there's not a rain for quite some time as well, and the air's dry and there's a breeze. So, you know, we do need to keep an eye on watering, I'm taking it.
Yes, pretty much. I just kind of don't get complacent with the watering, basically. Get into the habit of checking them pretty much every night, because it can be quite, like you say, the breeze there can be quite drying, even though you do see rain at times. So just get in the habit of checking them. And like with your bedding plants, if you do nothing else, when you keep them watered, you'll be grand.
And deadheaded. I haven't seen a wasp or bee of kind.
Yes, funny, wasps there, generally there's a few about, I was actually working in a place yesterday up in Malin, and the place was covered
teeming with them.
So it was, but wasps generally now is a time to sort of check your outbuildings and stuff, because wasps are actively starting to nest at the minute. Funny, I got one in my own shed the last day, which is where they just started building a nest. And whereas probably if it's an out of the way area, maybe some people wouldn't mind, but if it's an area where children are, that would be quite dangerous.
Is it obvious? Is it like lots of wasps in one particular area?
You'll see them going in and out, and then you'll see the nest sort of forming. It starts like, it's like a papery structure, it starts with the size of an egg, but it can get up to like the size of a football with thousands of wasps in it, so it's a good idea.
They don't make honey at all, wasps.
No, they don't think so, no. But the other thing, wasps tend to go where there's a food source, and what I've found is a lot of people now are sort of hoard their cans and bottles to bring them back for their recycling money. Mm-hmm. So that would be very attractive to a wasp. So just if you're storing them in your shed of that, just keep an eye.
Dirty little buggers.
Do they provide, is there any benefit to them, wasps?
I'm sure probably for pollinating purposes they have some sort of, they have some benefit, if you know what I mean. Mm. But to be honest, I could do without them.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. Why is my strawberries got fungus on them?
Why is your strawberries got fungus on them? Possibly with fungus and that sort of thing, generates airflow. Mm. Maybe if they're in a polytunnel or if they're somewhere like that there, that mildew can build up on them. So with a view to that, if you open out the plant a wee bit more, get more air going in, or even if you open the doors here, if they're in as inside, if you know what I mean. But mm-hmm. To treat the fungus, sort of an organic way of doing that, is a lot of people swear by spray them with semi-skim milk, and that actually
what's going to come out of your mouth 1 week to the next.
So, but a bit of semi-skim milk, and apparently, because you don't want to be using chemicals, because your strawberries, quite soon after you'd spray them. You know what I mean? So try that on them, see how it goes.
Okay, but you've heard that enough to trust that it could work.
Yes, absolutely.
There's something eating my strawberries, just the fruit, not the leaves. Can never see anything on them, but the fruit is being completely destroyed. Any ideas what it might be or how to stop it, for that matter?
I'd be 99.9% sure it's slugs. It's actually right. Slugs doing damage can be wee tiny things that only really come out at night. So the notion would be, if you have like your strawberry sort of farming and it hasn't been attacked yet, if you get something on under it, like say an empty wee plant pot or something like that, and just lift it up a wee bit from the soil, it'll make that wee bit harder to access. So it might get you the fruit more than the slug.
How do you get rid of horse tail weed?
I don't know. I've had more people contact me recently about that. Generally, digging it out doesn't really work because you leave the roots behind and it grows.
What about
that.
Burning it? You see these gas yolks?
Yes. Burning tends to burn just what's above the ground.
Yeah, it's okay.
So it does. And most of the sprays do the same. And because it's sort of waxy texture, it doesn't really take in the sprays either. So probably just diligence in terms of trying to dig it out as best you can, especially if it's on round plants.
I was going to ask, where's the future pay option in the Donegal parking app? But that's a different topic. deciding which location to put a polytunnel, I have two possible spots. One, full light area, but worse, soil near house. Or two, better soil, but less sun away from the house.
Right, so...
it's kind of exciting. They're in a little
exactly,
thing.
Yeah, funny. It's
kind
a nice,
of gives me a wee buzz, that.
It's a nice problem to have, in terms you have, because most people have just one area suitable. In terms of, I suppose, there are pros and cons of everything. Generally, full sun wouldn't be someone who would bother me, particularly in the sense if you have about 6 hours of daylight a day, it should be plenty. Mm. And sometimes, like say July, August, full sun can be more a problem than... It's good in the springtime, but the summertime might be too much. The poor soil in one location wouldn't really bother me either, in the sense that you're always going to be improving your soil.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe using raised beds. So did they say one place was closer to the house?
Yeah.
Generally, I would always go fairly close to the house just for convenience sake, in terms of you're outing and watering. If it's a wet day, you can sort of nip out and in. So
yeah, okay.
I would tend to go.
I think so. And nice, easy access.
The main concern I would have about our situation in polytunnel would be the wind. If you have one side that's windier than the other, I would tend to put it in the less windy, obviously. And sort of you can orientate the side of the tunnel towards the prevailing wind too, helps. So, but chat to somebody in the evening in the garden centre, even ourselves down there.
Nice complaint to have, exciting times. How and when do you grow rhubarb?
Generally, you'd plant rhubarb autumn or springtime. You can buy the crowns there, you can buy it in pots.
So now is just not
now.
The time.
Generally, most garden centres would even have it in pots now.
Okay.
But you wouldn't get a crop on after the crown next year. But very easy to grow. Just plenty of water, plenty of manure.
All right, okay. Our obsession with lawns is ridiculous. All wide flowers are needed for pollinators, which we need. No pollinators, no food. This is one of those, again, like, how much do you want to be responsible for nature and the environment? Do you believe you've got any role? Do you care? Or do you want your lawn looking the best? You know, a lot of lawns grow patchy and there's weeds come up and then they're cut more regularly, perhaps even than they need to be. It's up to people's own moral compass, really, isn't it?
Pretty much all matter of a choice in terms of, like, suppose it's your house, your garden.
Do you think bees are important? Well, if you do, well, you leave your flowers up for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Do you not care about bees? Cut your lawn till it's yellow. You know what? I don't.
I suppose it's a matter of compromise. Like if you had concern for the bees,
do whatever's do whatever's in the wall of your house.
Yeah,
and then all fence, and then not worry about it. I would suggest. What's the best way to plant rose snippings? In a banana or a spud?
Yes, sort of. This is coming probably from a lot of your sort of TikTok hacks and that you see at the minute and stuff you see online. Generally, rose cuttings, you can do it two ways. You can take softwood cuttings, probably now at the end of the summer, or even do hardwood cuttings sort of into the autumn time. A lot of people do stick them into a potato and then bury the potato, because that provides, it seals up the cut in terms of any infection getting in, and also as the potato degrades, it provides fertiliser for the rose cutting. So generally, to be honest, like, people have been growing for centuries without potatoes or bananas, if you know what I mean. So, but if I was pushed towards either of them, say the potato would be more likely.
Only time for two quickies. What vegetables can I plant at this time of year?
Now, pretty much anything from the cabbage family. Even you could sort of start your onions, scallions, that sort of stuff, lettuces. There are loads of choice out there at the minute that you can do.
And wildflowers, how important are they to nature? We kind of touched on that. Well, they're very important, aren't they?
Yes, no, they are very important, yeah. All right.
Is it good to leave a patch? Is that a compromise?
Yes, that would be a compromise, sort of, yeah. Like, if you want the pristine lawn, have a patch sort of around the back of the house where you can let go wild.
And finally, what's the environmentally friendly way to spray roses?
You can buy environmentally friendly rose sprays, sort of like Rose Garden.
Are they any good?
They're good, but they tend to be very expensive. So they're compared to the ordinary stuff.
Always a rub, isn't there?
But generally, if you want to protect your roses, keeping them well fed, keep the plants strong, and they'll be able to fight off things a lot better themselves.
All right, listen, Paul, thanks so much for calling up. Great stuff. We'll have you back in a couple of weeks.
Perfect.
Look forward to it already. Paul from Ballagher Garden Centre. Just to remind you, the team down at Ballagher Garden Centre, super friendly. Any questions, drop in. And I can say, all of our centres right around this beautiful region too, they're all very, very friendly and love to see you in, bring pictures and they'll give you advice in their time. Paul, thanks so very much indeed. Matthew Cramsey, good morning to you. Thanks so much for calling in. How are you keeping?
Good, Craig. Thank you very much for having me.
Good to have you back on the show. New song coming out, Follow Me. We're going to hear that. It's coming out next week.
Yeah, so it's coming out on the 4th of July. A lot of people, I'm hoping, will know it. It's a cover of a song, came out in 2000. So when you hear it, I hope you know it. That was kind of the plan, on releasing a cover first before we release originals again. So I'm just hoping people enjoy it and get behind it and see how it goes.
There is some amazing songs that, you know, those songs that come on the radio and you forgot, but they're brilliant. And I don't know why they're not re-recorded a bit more, especially by sort of Irish artists, because, you know, alongside your own work as well.
Yeah, this one I have noticed, like, every single time I gig it in the last 9 months, maybe to a year, it's one of those songs you can see people's, it comes on the brain, they're like, oh, how do I know this? Mm. And then by the time it gets to the chorus, they're singing it. And I was like, you know, when you're kind of looking for something at that time, I was like, what could I do to try and, you know, launch a new thing? And I just thought that was a great idea. So I'm hoping now it does well, please God.
I didn't realise it was about cheating on your wife. Is it from the man's perspective, is it?
I think, as far as I know, I think he's trying to get her to cheat on her spouse with him, as far as I know. Never actually thought about the lyrics. It's one of them songs, it just comes on, you're singing.
I think too, it's one of those ones, a good song, actually you can interpret it whichever way.
Exactly.
You can sort of fit it into your own situ, and that's how they start endearing themselves to people. It also has to be catchy and everything. Yeah. So you're post-Kjol now, you're all in now to the Matthew Cramsey project. Is it about, as a solo artist, do you want to get a new crew together? What's your plans? What's your future looking like in that regard?
Yeah, so the plan is now, obviously, I left Kjol in October there last year, and we're just, obviously, I've always done the original thing. Even before I joined the band, I was doing original music. But then going on the road and seeing, you know, the scale of the shows and stuff, I realised that it takes something very, very special to just do original music and get to that scale. So I've kind of dialed in a bit, and I'm like, right, I don't mind doing covers and doing them my way with kind of the sound that, like, all the tracks that are going to be released from now on have a similar sound. I'm trying to get a band on the road as well, and I've kind of recorded everything with that band aspect in mind. And then I suppose the plan is just keep the head down and hope for world domination, really. I have loads of songs written, some that are kind of in the Irish music vein, some that are in the very much country music vein. But as, again, just trying to keep the instrumentation and all that kind of stuff the same, hoping they all fall into the same gaze, and then just hope that people like it, you know. And eventually, I would love to get to the point where I was doing ticketed gigs or like festivals and stuff.
Why not, though? Why? What? Like, and I think you're right too. Firstly, most of the big artists, their first couple of songs, they don't write them.
Yeah.
Right. And then they get sort of a writing credit.
Yeah.
You know yourself, yeah. Right? And they'll do covers as well. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. I think if you go, right, everything has to be own, blah, blah, blah. I think that does hold some people back. But also, too, like, to another contemporary example about having a sound, like, as soon as a Sabrina Carpenter song starts, you know it's her.
Exactly.
Right? Like, now, it's not samey.
Yeah.
And I'm not a musician, so I don't know why.
Yeah.
But I know a new track from her, that's Sabrina Carpenter, or someone ripping her off.
Like, I know for myself, even, you know, with Spotify and stuff, if there's a new artist and they're covering a song I know, I will, 9 times out of 10, go and listen to the artist then. Do you know what?
Yeah, do that.
That's,
yeah.
Like, it's such a strange thing. And the funny thing about it is, like, someone writes a song and they sing it and people are like, oh, it's grand. But then if someone, like your friend beside you, could say, oh, he wrote this song, and they'll sing it, and people are like, oh, must check this out. It's just such a strange thing.
So you're heading off to America, and you've got plenty of gigs lined up all over the place, actually. I mean, how do you sort of, is it tough? Are you sourcing these gigs yourself, as well as maybe working on a band, working together?
I have been very, very lucky. The last couple of years, my social media has been, it's not massive.
You work hard on it, in fairness,
it's, but it's not a massive, it's not a massive scale. But what I have is a very, very loyal following. I have very supportive people. I have very supportive venues all around. And then, luckily enough, for like Donegal and on the show, there are so many people from here that are moving away and doing really well for themselves, and they want to give back and they want to bring someone from home.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, that's what's happening in Boston. I'm going out to a lad called Oren out there. He's from Mavill, so shout out to them as well. But
fantastic.
He's got a couple of bars out there, and it's just one of those things. You just keep the head down and keep, you know, plugging away at it, and hopefully it just, it takes off over time.
Yeah, but I mean, you talk about social media, that's in your hands, you know, and you do work hard, and it's about content and reach and people liking what you're doing. It's not just setting up the Matthew Crampsey Project or whatever it might be called, and it, you know.
Well, I try and keep mine. I try and keep mine kind of into my life, you know, and I'm like, people will be scunnered to see me post about golf at the minute, but I just have taken up golf and I'm just really into it. So, like, I don't try and do it. Like, I see a lot of people just kind of jump on trends and they're like eating fish and chips, and you're like, that's never what I'm going to do. You know, I'm hopeful that people like the songs and then eventually like the fella, and if, or like one or the other, I'm happy enough.
Yeah, you know, and you seem to sort of want to know where you want to go, and I think I'm getting the impression, like saying, putting the band together, you feel that that's part of your building to where you want to get to.
Yeah, well, just from my own experience, I've been doing the one-man thing now like 15 years. I started when I was 15, I'm 30 now. I've been playing as a one-man that long. Obviously, I joined Kjol and then was doing that, but I was still gigging on my own even when I was in Kjol. So the one thing I have noticed is it's hard work.
Well, I think
to keep a crowd for 2 hours.
It is, and I think I think you have to be, you have to have already been built to carry it off, if that makes sense.
Because
I think when someone sees a one, like the obvious suggestion would be Ed Sheeran, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, he does something different, but also then he had this fantastic catalogue of music and things worked out for him, and then he could get away with going down to Crook Park and playing on his own, right?
Exactly.
With a bit of a band hidden under the stage, right?
Exactly. So it's,
but
just,
it's very hard even to get a big gig in a reasonably sized pub, you know.
100%.
They want to see 4 guys there in a drum kit, don't they? Or 4 guys and girls. It's just, you know, I think if you're massive, you can get away with it. But I think to get the gigs that you're looking for and to get the platform you're looking for, you're going to need a bit more on the stage.
There's so much more you can do, like with a band. It's so funny. I'd be gigging there as one piece and I use an acoustic guitar and a stomp pedal. And I can be playing a song maybe 2 or 3 times faster than it's meant to be played. And you'll have someone go, do you know anything lively? And you're like, if you knew how much effort I was putting in to go into
the right
speed.
Right legs hanging off me. All right, brilliant stuff. Right, we're going to listen to your recording of Follow Me, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Obviously, we could have people listening in Boston or Manchester. Where are you going to be performing locally for the summer? Because you're flat out anyway.
So I actually do every Tuesday night in McGinley's here in Letterkenny. Yeah. And then I do a residency in Derry on a Wednesday night as well as a Thursday night. Friday nights and Saturday nights, I could be anywhere. So you can just follow me on social media there. It's just Matthew Crampsey on all.
And I think it's Watch This Space, really.
Well, hopefully. Well.
Yeah, exactly. No, hopefully. Well, why not? Why not? All right, brilliant stuff, Matthew. Always a pleasure to talk to you. I wish you nothing but nothing but success.
Thank you very much.
And here's your take on Follow Me. Where is that? It's over here, isn't it? Okay. There's a lot of going on in front of me.
Follow me and everything is all right. I'll be the one to tuck you in at night. If you wanna leave, I can guarantee you won't find nobody else like me. You don't know how you met me, you don't know why you can't.
That's Matthew Crampsey's version of Follow Me. It's on our system now, so you're going to hear more of that. Don't worry about it. But Matthew's back because he nearly forgot something really important. Go on, quick.
Yeah, so I just want to say a massive happy second birthday to my goddaughter, Lottie. I know as well, Brody and Sophia are listening as well. And I know there's loads of people listening. Taylor, Mum, Dad, just thank you very much for tuning in. And I'll see you later.
And of course, you will have a very recent picture of you and your goddaughter posted, I presume.
She's terrified of me at the moment. So
no, but you have a recent picture, do you? No?
No.
Yeah, you've been posting old pictures because she's scared of you.
She's it's so bad. She screams whenever she sees me, so we're working on it. We're working on it.
All right, okay. Well, it's not your music she's scared of. All right, what's your name again?
Lottie.
Happy birthday, Lottie. Okay, thanks, Matthew.
Thanks, good cheers.
And we're going to be back to you with you tomorrow morning at 9. Stay tuned. Donna Marie Doherty's up around the Northwest after the break.